Paul, I am super, super excited to have the two of you on here. This is so you should know that I'm with my my co-founder Steve Tuck, and with my close colleague Adam Leventhal, and all three of us are definitely our baseball fans. In fact, I did not grow up a baseball fan at all, and baseball, I have to say, and this is why I was hoping that we will get some folks here who are actually not baseball fans, because I was in your shoes as an adult. I grew up in Denver before the Rockies were there. And I just couldn't understand why people got into baseball. Like, the idea of like traveling around to every ballpark in the country just struck me as like a mental illness, honestly. I gotta say, I just, it sounded deranged. And Adam, I think the first like eye-opening baseball game I went to was with you, actually. Adam, you're a Red Sox fan.
I am.
And you are in the, what's the line in Connecticut that design that divides Red Sox fans from Yankees? There's got a name,
Munson,
right?
The Munson-Nixon line. Thurman Munson and Trot Nixon. So it's the line down Connecticut that divides the Yankees fans from the Red Sox fans. But not firmly enough, I would say.
You know, move over Wikipedia. Adam is with you on the Connecticut knowledge, celebrating the victory of your UConn Huskies.
That's right.
So you are on the Red Sox side of that line, grew up a baseball fan.
Well, actually I'm right on that line, but my dad is from the Boston area. So I definitely grew up big Red Sox fan, to the point where my friends would come over with Yankees hats and my dad would force them to leave them outside our house.
Your friend can come in, but the hat may not. The hat must stay outside.
There are a lot of people who I tell you that to, and they're like, your dad's horrible. And but the Red Sox fans are like, that makes sense.
Tough but fair. That's good parenting. That's, right. That's reasonable.
Raised right.
Exactly. Take off your shoes. Take off your hat.
Yeah. You're allowed to come into the Yankees fan is allowed to come into the house. Like, that's pretty flexible.
Yeah. The shoes soil the house. The hat soils the house.
So this made no sense to me growing up. All of this made no sense to me. And I,
growing up, you said you were a sports fan.
I was a sports fan, but Denver's a football town. And so and it was only as, and Steve, you grew up in the Bay, Giants fan.
Giants fan.
Went to games in the stick, grew up in the stick.
In the 80s.
In the 80s.
Will Clark showed up.
We need to start the countdown clock to when Will the Thrill Clark is going to be mentioned. I literally couldn't even get that sentence out, and you're already mentioning Will the Thrill Clark. So
good memories.
So again, all of this just sounded odd to me. And Adam, you and I went to an A's game, an A's Red Sox game in 2012. And I, at the time, my oldest son had just basically fallen in love with baseball, a love affair that has persisted and endured. And we went to that game and you were explaining a bunch of the game to me. And like, I didn't, you know, what a slider was and what a curveball was. And that was 2012. And Paul and Brian, I think you were probably A's fan. I know you all both are A's fans. That season was just extraordinary. And it was, what a great first season to be a baseball fan. And it was just like the whole thing about baseball was just, it was eye-opening and exuberant. And it felt like the A's experience was such a great experience. And so that baseball kind of got into my DNA, and we don't talk about it too frequently here because we know that not everyone's a sports fan, but I definitely understand why people look at this and just like perplexed, but it's a great sport and it's so much fun to watch with people. I love the fact it's got this, it's a sport you can nerd out about. Like, this is the original nerd sport. Adam, don't you think, is it fair to say?
Absolutely.
Sabermetrics and everything else.
Yeah. The obsession with statistics and, I know there's lots of other fantasy leagues, but I feel like, you know, one of my experiences of baseball was waking up and looking at the box scores from the night before and sort of reliving the game in this ridiculous textual format.
Which is amazing, right? The fact that you can kind of look at a box score and know what happens. And it's also just a great way to bond with people. And the thing I love about baseball, I think kind of unlike other sports, is it's really easy to be a fan of the sport, to go to a game. And Adam, you and I have been to a lot of games together, and it's just fun to go watch a game, even though you are both supporting opposite teams. Although actually, so Brian and Paul, Adam and I were together for Sean Manaea's no hitter. Those of you who don't know baseball, a no hitter is when the team never gets a hit over the course of the game. The pitcher is able to go through the entire game without the other team ever getting a hit and getting on base as a result of a hit. And I had never seen a no-hitter, of course. Adam, you had never seen a no-hitter, of course.
No.
And We are in the ninth inning with two outs. And I remember, Adam, I looked at you and I'm like, this is your first no hitter. It's like, yeah, this would be my first no hitter. I'm like, is there any part of you that wants the A's to get a no hitter? He's like, no part of me. I 100% want the Red Sox to get a hit right now.
I remember that so distinctly. Hanley Ramirez was the first at bat. And I said, knock it out of the park, Hanley. And you turned to me and you're like,
how dare you,
you're
sir.
A terrible person. Like you said that to me.
The funny thing about no hitters is that it's like exciting in theory, but it's actually a pretty boring baseball game because
it's a very boring baseball game. It's so fast.
You're watching the whole game and no one gets a hit. That's the whole point of the no hitter. So like all the excitement of baseball is people getting hit bases and moving around and like you miss all that. So like it's exciting after it happens, but during the game, it's actually the worst game to see.
Well, I will say
it was pretty riveting at the time.
There are some moments where you've got like Gregor Blanco's catch and Matt Cain's perfect game, like everyone hanging on every pitch and every play because you're waiting for a defensive play to keep the no hitter intact.
Right,
for baseball fans, it's like edge of your seat.
It's edge of your seat. So fast forward because loved the A's. Paul, Brian, you are A's fans. Unfortunately, we have the misfortune of having the worst ownership in sports. We won't belabor this, but we have the absolute terrible owner who is ripping the heart out of the city and moving the team. And this is where I kind of want to get to our startup today. And Paul and Brian, what you are just the remarkable thing that you're pulling off, because I think I saw this and obviously my heart is ripped out. You know, I think Steve, even as a Giants fan, you love that Battle of the Bay, you know, your heart is ripped out.
The A's are the Giants fans, American League team.
Right. And, I think Adam, obviously you've been, he's like every baseball fan sees that this is terrible and it just felt very awful. And it felt like there was no positivity to be had. And Paul and Brian, you guys found some positivity. So Paul, I'd love to, like, where is the genesis for this outlandish startup idea that you had? Because you're A's fans, right?
Yeah. We're A's fans. As mentioned, like the rare thing you can do in the Bay, which is, you know, you can have your AL team be the A's and then have your NL team be the Giants. And certainly that's true for Brian. So we like both teams. We're desperate, big A's fans. You know, our friendship was actually formed being A's fans and memories like you and Adam were sharing just how great it is and how much of a bonding experience, you know, kind of baseball can be.
Which is true. I had a Maguire Canseco poster in the late 80s, and I also had a Will the Thrill. You guys mentioned Will Clark before. Both ways. All straight A's.
Yeah, I mean, I had the A's pennant up. I had the Raleigh Fingers autographed ball. Like, I had a bunch of Oakland stuff.
You never told me this.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's coming out now.
All right, it's coming out. Yeah, sorry, Paul.
Yeah, my background is definitely not, you know, baseball. My career ended when they took the ball off the tee. But my career has been startups, mostly, ed tech startups specifically. But when the whole A's drama was happening, I was, you know, desperately concerned about what that would mean for Oakland and what that would mean for our community. And, you know, there's just a role that baseball plays, I think, in a lot of cities, but particularly in Oakland, where, you know, baseball is this thing that brings us together, right? Like the city colors are green and gold. Like there is something about the right field and the left field at the Coliseum that is uniquely unifying. And there's something that sports does, which is bring, you know, people together and specifically baseball, because there's so much time and space and ability to talk and ability to nerd out and all the things you're talking about. And while that was happening, I was like, you know, I don't know how to, I don't know anything really about baseball, but I know how to start companies that solve problems. And this feels like a problem and maybe a company we're solving. So then I called my close friend, Brian, and Brian and I have been friends since high school, bonded in part by baseball experiences. And over the last few years, we've been looking for something to do together. Brian's career, and I'll let him talk at some point if his microphone's working, but Brian's career has been spent in media and movies and sort of very different world. But I called him and said, hey, I think there's you know, business opportunity here. The A's are leaving one of the most entrenched, you know, fan bases. There's 58 years of baseball history. There's multiple organizations whose identities are set around baseball. Like, if we can do it the right way, you know, we can build something, you know, interesting. And he's, and Brian said, you know, I don't know as much about as business as you do, but I know about stories, and this is a really interesting story. And so that was, you know, late June, and we launched, you know, the Oakland Bees, the late Ballers, June. And it's very much, wow. Very much a business and very much a story, as all good businesses are.
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to ask you what the time frame was. So the original announcement was in April, very gutting. By the time we get through to June, it's kind of pretty clear, like, all right, you know, screw these guys, they're leaving. So, and everyone was kind of kicking rocks, honestly. I felt like and I just think it's a remarkable, Paul, that you kind of had that. Brian, what was it like to kind of receive that call and be like, wait a minute, can we actually do this? Can we start a baseball team? I mean, it seems crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it was well-timed, first of all. Like Paul said, we've been looking for something to do together. I'm also, you know, I'm in the WGA. It was like May, June. I went on strike, so my industry shut down. So I'm sitting there looking at the rest of my life and watching Hollywood crumble, and also, you know, chomping at the bit to do something different and that uses everything that I love to do with telling stories, but is there a new outlet for it? And we were just devastated, like Paul said, you know, we were just crushed, not just by the fact that the A's were leaving, but the narrative around it, because right, like sports radio and also all media, like you turn on the news and it's like, Oakland is falling apart. This is a city in decay. Ugh. They lost the Raiders. They lost twice. They lost the Warriors. And now the A's, this is not a pro sports city. And that just did not sit right for us, because that is not our experience with Oakland. Oakland is a beautiful city. Oakland is a city with a really bright future. And it just didn't sit right what was being said. So when Paul called and was like, do you think we could start a baseball team? I was like, well, I mean, we don't know anything about that, but we're like kind of smart and good at doing things. And it's definitely a good story. And I think there's definitely an opening. And we were watching this amazing fan activation around the reverse boycott in June. And, you know, you've got a fan base that people are talking shit about, saying they just can't support the team. But we were seeing something that was incredibly contrary to that. We were seeing incredible activation and activism around, let's show this ownership group what we're really all about. And so we're like, you know, if we can do it right, and if we can present something that really feels like it's with the community and for the community, you know, maybe people will, maybe it'll work.
That's amazing. Okay. So I was going to ask that, if the reverse boycott played any role in terms of like, wow, there's a lot. Could you describe the reverse boycott a little bit, Brian? Cause that, I mean, it is one of the most extraordinary experiences of my life. Honestly, I was there with my whole family, and it was, except my 19-year-old who lived out of state, was very jealous that he couldn't be there for it, was there in spirit, but it was such an extraordinary experience for us. So could you describe a little bit what the reverse boycott was?
Yeah. I mean, Paul, I devastatingly wasn't there. So Paul, you describe it.
Yeah. So, just as context, you know, there is this narrative around, you know, the A's leaving, which is that, you know, Oakland's not a baseball fan. There are no fans here. And Oakland has, you know, been at the bottom of the league for the last few years in attendance. And so A's fans will tell you that's because there's been no investment on the product in the field. And if you're not going to invest in the product, you know, you're not going to get customers. That's pretty much true in any business. But, you know, kind of to prove this notion that there's no fans here wrong, the fans themselves organized the concept of a reverse boycott. So they picked a random Tuesday, deliberately chosen for being particularly random, deliberately chosen for being a Tuesday because that's the lowest attendance days.
Not a Red Sox game, importantly, right?
A Rays game. Not a Red Sox game. not any place that anybody would care enough that you're going to have to take your hat off before you go inside the house, right? Like, this is a game of very little interest. And the idea was like, look, if we can have people show up, all come and show up on this particular day, you know, it shows that the fans are here. It's not the problem. The problem is not with the fans. And they did. It was, you know, I think that it was announced, you know, 27,000 people. I think they're now there was more than that, and they, you know, kind of decreased the announcement. And everybody showed up. The energy was like a playoff game or a World Series game. It was incredible energy. And then, you know, most magically, you know, in the fifth inning, they did a moment of silence for 55 seconds because the A's had been in Oakland for 55 seconds. And it should be said that
at that moment of silence, the only thing that we knew we were going to do is be silent. There was no other like further instructions. There was no like, what happens after the silence? Like, I don't know. We're just going to be silent 55 seconds. I remember really being silent. Like, okay, we're going to be silent.
It's amazing. And the whole stadium is silent, 30,000 people silent. And then after that, everybody starts, chanting, sell the team so loud that the announcers on television, couldn't ignore it, what was happening. And the activism of that, the energy of that, the coordination of that was incredibly, incredibly impressive, incredibly impressive. So yeah, that was a, like, there's something here. There's some energy to help galvanize. There's some energy to use. And also, on the flip side, like, hey, what's that energy going to do if it doesn't have a channel, right? And so, yeah, very much like our idea was like inspired or made believable or whatever you want to say by the reverse boycott.
That's amazing to hear, because the energy of that game was so positive, which it was such a great experience. And it reminded me, God, I miss this so much. I was there in right field with my wife and daughter. My 16-year-old was there with all his 16-year-old buddies. They all got seats they wanted to be in on the first base line. So they were on the other side, and it was just so great to be among A's fans that were all like, we're across all these different strata. And, people from very different walks of life all coming together for kind of this moment. And it didn't, it didn't feel angry or resentful. It felt uplifting and joyous. And so you come out of that being like, is this it for baseball? And if Paul, it's so funny, you come out of that being like, this can't be it. Like, we can go do something with this.
Can't be it. Okay, exactly. This can't be it, and we got to do something about it. And yeah, the positivity was incredible. Like, people were saying there's going to be riots or there need to be a police presence. There was none of that. There was absolutely none of that. This was a remarkable, peaceful protest and a demonstration of what, Oakland and the Oakland fan base is all about.
And it did feel like, it felt like you're part of, you're not at a sports event. You're part of a social movement of like, this is a city saying like that we exist, we're here. And don't count us out. And it was incredibly uplifting. And then, of course, bittersweet as we took tons of selfies as we're leaving the Coliseum, because I'm like, this could be the last time I'm here. This place that has meant so much for my kids. My kids grew up here. We were season ticket holders until they doubled the prices and gutted the team. So you call Brian. You're like, we got to go start a baseball team, which is just nuts to me. And I'm so grateful for your insanity in this regard. And what's next? I mean, as entrepreneurs ourselves, and Adam, you've done this as well. I mean, the kind of the first question is like, all right, we got to go like raise money. We got to figure out, what was next? What was the kind of the next step once you decided like, all right, we're in, we don't know anything about this, but we're in.
Well, first thing is you have to join a league. And Brian, maybe you can talk about you can't just play baseball against yourself. So unlike other businesses, you got to join a league.
Yeah. So we had to join a league, and there's affiliate baseball and there's independent baseball and there's also collegiate baseball. Right. So those are sort of the levels. Affiliate baseball is tricky. Like, I don't think Oakland wants to be, the Devil Rays or Houston's like affiliate. Like, Oakland doesn't, not going to work for Oakland. So that was not in the cards. And that's also that's like a nefarious, complicated, we got to deal with MLB type of thing. And then there's collegiate ball and there's independent baseball. There's essentially four, legit indie baseball leagues in America: the Atlantic League, the Frontier League, the Pioneer League, and the American Association. So we, figured out how to get an agent. Paul had a connection. Paul had been doing a little bit of investing in some international sports organizations, and so had an agent. And so Paul sets up a meeting for us with this agent who connects, people that want to invest in sports franchises with opportunities and leagues. And he's like, Paul said, Brian, two minutes before the call, just like pretend like you're the big money guy. I was like, okay, what does that mean?
Brian, you're from Dubai now. You're from Dubai. So just
you're from Dubai. There was a little bit of like fake until you make it. We talked to this agent. We subsequently talked to a couple of these independent leagues, and they're like taking us seriously. And we would get off the phone or get off the Zooms, and we would be like giggling that, like, oh my gosh, they think that like they're talking to us about, you know, starting an expansion team, but they were like considering what we were saying about bringing a team to Oakland, and they were
interesting.
You know, yeah, and so. So
because really they had seen the same things that you had seen. I mean, because you're kind of coming in. I mean, the great thing about that reverse boycott is it really did change the media narrative. People are realizing like, oh my God, there are fans there. And I feel like the number one question you always have with any investors is like, tell me about the market. And I feel like you can say like, yeah, let me tell you about the market, because this is a market that exists and it's being abandoned. I mean, it feels like you could, was that helping at all? The fact that this wasn't Oakland, the fact that the reverse boycott had happened?
They knew about the market. Yeah, we didn't have to sell them on the market. Like, people were excited about the market. And the concept. You know, we had to eventually sell them on our credibility and capability of actually like pulling this off. And then we had to solve a lot of like logistical hurdles. Like, how do you play in a league as California teams when the rest of the teams are in Montana, Colorado, and Utah? And where do you play? Where do you play baseball in Oakland?
Yeah.
That was a big one. But pretty quickly, like, multiple leagues were interested in having us. And so then we had the opportunity to decide which one to participate in.
Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
And so it was because of that media narrative that they were jumping at it?
Because of the media, I think folks were interested in Brian and my background. It's very different than the people who own minor league teams. They like the idea of having, you know, somebody with startup experience, somebody with kind of media experience. Like, it was, we presented a, you know, different, as much as we were like faking it to make it, the reality was they actually liked us and liked the combination of what we could probably accomplish. So we ended up with multiple offers to join leagues. We ultimately decided on the Pioneer League because we really liked its positioning as a league. It's sort of become like the innovation league for baseball.
So it
has a relationship with MLB, but it's not, the teams are not affiliated. But it does rules innovation. It tests new rules and new opportunities and then the MLB uses the data to make a determination of what rules they want to end up doing in the future. And that allows some opportunity to make the game a little bit more fun as well. So like as a prime example, instead of extra innings in regular season games, it has a home run derby it calls a knockout round. But it's like a home run derby that decides ties.
That's pretty cool.
I like that.
Isn't that? I know. That
it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. You know, 4 minutes, you know, 4 minutes, it's done. It requires it really fan friendly. It also makes the business model easier because you know when things are going to stop.
I never thought about the business model implications of extra innings. There is obviously. Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, when you're in the 18th.
You don't know when you need your shuttles to go away. Like, it's actually having...
You already stopped selling beer in the 7th, and then you can't be like, never mind, I know it's the 11th, we're going to start selling beer again.
Okay, I would like to get my extra innings mixed feelings out there. It also takes away Jerry Blevins' hit in the 18th inning of a 22-inning game against the Angels at, like, midnight. That is one of my best memories as an A's fan. And then, Adam, it also takes away the Paw Sox in their 33-inning game. Is that the...
33, that's right.
I assume you. I can rely on Connecticut to represent the Paw Sox, right? I mean, is that a fair?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, Red Sox affiliate. I spent a lot of time in Rhode Island too, so, and went to a lot of Paw Sox games.
And in fact, you and I went to a Paw Sox game together.
That's right. That's right. Right before my wedding, with your kids and mine, and have a lot of cups that celebrate the 33 innings. And I don't know if you know that. I got to get this in. My neighbor in Rhode Island was the scorekeeper for that game.
Do I know this? You introduce this person. I took a photo with my kids with this guy being like, this guy is really famous. And it was only after the fact, they're like, wait a minute, what was he? I'm like, he was the scorekeeper for the longest baseball game. And actually, we did go to the Hall of Fame, and that scorecard is in the Hall of Fame. So this is pretty great. But okay, so we have said our piece for extra innings. We have now everything positive we have to say about extra innings. From a business perspective, I can see why a home run derby would be a lot more interesting.
Two things that have ever happened in extra innings, and you just named them. In the history of extra innings, you named both of them. They also, for example, next year we're going to test a challenge rule for challenging balls and strikes. So it's anyway, like, we like that. you know, we kind of like that positioning and think that there's an opportunity. We think baseball could be a little bit more fun. We think the game could be a little bit more engaging. We think it could be a little bit more exciting. And we thought that that fit really well with the product that we were trying to build. And so we ended up choosing, you know, this Pioneer League.
So I got to tell you, I love also, so the Pioneer League, as you mentioned, it's in Idaho, it's in Montana, it's in Utah, it's in Colorado. I kind of love where it is. I mean, I grew up in the American West, obviously I grew up in Denver. And my 16-year-old and I are going to take a road trip this summer to visit colleges, and we're stopping at some Pioneer League games along the way. So I'm excited to take it to watch. I think this is the Boise Raptors. I can't remember the name of the Boise team, but we're going to watch the Boise team. But, now, at what point, so you go to the Pioneer, you're excited about the Pioneer League. They're an innovative league. They also have got caps about how long you can have played in, like, I think you, are you allowed any players that have played in Major League Baseball? I mean, this is not like a place where players go to retire. This is a,
right.
A league for young players.
So there's like a marketing exception. Like if we wanted like, you know, Dennis Eckersley to come and get some saves for us, we could do that. I think you have one marketing exception a month, but yes, by and large, it is, you have to have 3 years or fewer of professional baseball experience. And, you know, at first we were like, what are you talking about? We want to get those old, like retired players when they're coming back.
No, yeah.
But
no.
But we've really come around after talking to a lot of the other, you know, folks who run the other teams in the league and the front office, the league office, because what it does is it really keeps the caliber of players incredibly high. Like these are, you know, MLB had 60 rounds of draft until recently, and they constricted it now to 20 rounds. And that means that there is a lot of really, really high caliber talent that isn't getting drafted to an affiliate team. And this is a league that, like, you know, Pedro Martinez came through this league, and, you know, Cody Bellinger and the guy who I hate on the Dodgers, what's his name? Clayton Kershaw.
Adam's like, you're gonna have to be a lot more.
Dodgers, exactly.
Clayton Kershaw, and then like you know, Cal Ripken, George Brett, people like that. So it's a legit league. Incredible talent comes through there, I think that keeping it to these players in their first 3 years of pro experience helps it stay at that high level.
So I have to say, I love this. I love this aspect of it. You know, my oldest plays college ball. So, you know, you see those guys who are all like working so hard, and it's such a, it's an infectious energy, and everyone is, you know, they're all pursuing their dream. Like they've all got their own story of the dream that they are pursuing, and they haven't made it. And I think it's so much fun to watch. I think it gives it such a positive energy. And I think it also just because they are, they are kind of on the upswing. You get some of these, I think, the best memories. I mean, Brian, I don't know that, you know, during that kind of 2012, 13, 14 run for the A's, I remember going to watch a bunch of Stockton Ports games and realizing like, man, there's some good guys in the system. This whole, like this Matt Chapman guy and Matt Olson guy, these guys rake, and watching those guys hit at, and of course, like the full, you know, they were at the Ports. It was great to watch them at the Stockton Ports. They played at the A's. I love them, the A's. And of course they got, you know, traded away for absolutely nothing. And are now going to Matt Chapman now with the Giants and Matt Olson with the Braves. But I love that aspect of it. And when the Rivercats were the A's minor league affiliate, I went to go watching Rivercats games with my kids. And cause they just couldn't get enough of it. It was great. And we saw this guy, the Rivercats, and I love learning his story. And this guy had been up to the show briefly, had never gotten a hit, was back down to the Rivercats, and the guy's just raking. He's a catcher. And we had three catchers up at the A's. I'm like, I'm never going to see this guy play at the A's, but I love him. I love watching him play. And it's just kind of a shame because, like, there's never going to be room for him. And it turns out, a couple injuries later, there was room for him. That was Stephen Vogt. And, you know, we were there when we got his first hit. He hadn't gotten a hit at all as a Rays player. And it's like, oh my God, that story, watching that guy get his first hit. And it just felt like, you know, when my son got his autograph, it's so like that stuff is so meaningful to watch these guys who haven't made it yet on the upswing is just really exciting. I think the stories are great. So I love the fact.
I mean, that's a, you know, it tells everything. Is, you know, first of all, the talent at this level is really strong, and the difference between people who make it or not are knife's edge. So, you know,
yes.
could be injuries in front of you, whether you make it or not. You know, talent is really strong. And the accessibility of baseball players at this level is like much different than at an MLB game. I mean, these are players who are excited about giving autographs for the first time. They're excited about playing in front of fans, you know, big groups of fans for the first time. It's just a much more accessible experience. And there's just a lot of energy. So yeah, as Brian said, like we initially were concerned about that, are now really excited about, you know, the where this sits and the fact that it's a developmental league.
Totally. All right. So now at what point, so you're excited about being in the Pioneer League. And was it contingent upon you entering, or at what point is it revealed to you that, hey, by the way, we can't just add one team to the league? did you kind of know that going in?
No, we didn't. You know, it's just so dumb. It's just so dumb because, you know, it's how hard it is to start anything, you know, and it's like you want to start two of the things at the same time. It's like 18 times harder. I don't know how that math works out, but that's exactly the ratio. We were looking for other options. We only wanted to do one team, but you need even number of teams in leagues for scheduling sake, right? There were some options of other owners who were thinking about joining the Pioneer League, and the commissioner and president were looking to see if they can push them to join a little earlier than they were expecting. And one by one, they didn't work out, and so it was getting, you know, sort of late in the cycle, and it was like we either have to wait until 2025 or we have to launch two teams, and we just didn't feel like we could wait. You know, we just didn't know how bizarre or like toxic or just, you know, bad that this year was going to be in Oakland without there being, you know, something that was guiding hope, something that was saying that baseball was going to stay. We just didn't want to do that, and so we kind of bit the bullet and said, let's launch two teams. And so then that became the YOLO High Wheelers, which is the other California team launched in the Pioneer League in 2024.
And Steve and Adam, I'm sure if you know this, that they started the YOLO High Wheelers as well, that they started the YOLO County team.
I knew they were playing the YOLO High.
Yeah, no, they started the team. They started the YOLO High.
That's our team too.
Yeah, that's that. They're like, all right, I guess we have to like, okay, wow. like so this VC needs to start a second company. I guess we'll start a second company as well.
Literally competing in the funding. Same space.
Yeah. Start a competing product.
Start your own competitor.
Well, then they also, I have to say, the thing I also loved is they also like, all right, well, screw it. We're also going to start a rivalry. So they've started like a Giants-Dodgers rivalry between the Ballers and the YOLO High Wheelers. I'm a little worried that, like, you know, the 80 years from now, kids are going to be like, yeah, there's a dividing line in this home between the YOLO. You can come in with a YOLO High Wheelers hat, but you have to take it off before you enter this home. This is an Oakland Ballers home. You'd be like, you know, actually the owner, originally those were the startup, those were the same.
Yeah. Same this is how Michigan, Ohio State started too.
Is that right? Yeah, that's great. But I think it was, this is where the story to me just gets like, fractal in terms of the challenge. Like you got so much challenge to get a place to play and everything else. And you're like, okay, I need to do this in parallel.
In an organization.
All
the people that you need to run it. I mean, it's incredible that you had to go do two of these. And how close to waiting to 2025 were you? Or was that never a consideration?
We didn't feel like we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
It just wasn't a consideration. It just didn't work for the problem we were going to solve. It was almost like don't do this at all or two teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it was closer to that consideration rather than thinking that we could wait until 2025. It was, you know, the need to kind of say there's going to be a next chapter in baseball in Oakland, the need to have some sort of like thing that to say yes to as opposed to say no to. I mean, we were very worried that the positivity, the reverse boycott was going to hit the reality of, no, the A's are definitely going, and that was going to break apart this like energy in this community, and we just didn't want it to let it happen. So no, I mean, it was we might have said that we can't do this, but if we had to do it, you know, we were going to accept the additional complexity of that you've all gone through.
Cost, complexity,
it's everything. And it's amazing. And I mean, I personally like can't wait to go. So you picked a part of that is also deprived of baseball, YOLO County. So this is in Davis, California, just outside of Sacramento. And here,
very familiar with it because I was stuck on the YOLO causeway for about 2 hours back from Tahoe.
And this is another, I mean, you've picked another good spot. I love, can you describe the High Wheelers as a name? Because I think some people are like, wait, what's the High Wheelers about? I love what you've done with the branding there. Can you describe that a little bit?
Sure. High Wheeler is a historic type of bicycle with a very large wheel in the front and a very small wheel in the back. You know, like those old timey bicycles. And they're very hard to ride. The Bicycle Hall of Fame is actually in Davis. Davis is like one of the greatest biking. If anybody spent time there, it's one of the greatest biking communities, you know, in the country. Incredibly bike friendly, incredibly proud of their bike culture. Not a lot of people riding these old timey High Wheelers, but it is the town, like it's the town logo. Like if you go to the city of Davis, yeah, they've got a high wheel bike. And we were like, that's cool. But the people, you know, let's do that. And that's how it happened. We did like a big brand exploration and had, spent a month investigating other names and then went back to the first thing that we thought of.
Right. It always works that way. It's like, all right, let's do the in-depth research. Actually, as it turns out, the thing that we had with our gut, and that was actually the right thing all along.
Exactly.
I love that. I also love, so this begins to tack into a couple of other things that I think you guys just nailed. And this, certainly we've tried to do the same at Oxide, very different problems starting a computer company, but it was similar in that we knew that people would want this. We'd have the kind of the wind at the back, and the kind of the reverence for history is something that's been really important for us. And I love your reference for all history, baseball history and otherwise. And you get it in, I mean, it feels like that's a very deliberate way to engage these communities and to lift them up. I mean, is that a fair read?
100%. You know, our concept is that like baseball existed in Oakland before the A's. Baseball is going to exist in Oakland after the A's. And part of being, we want to be part of that next chapter. We've said that, you know, from the launch, that's our goal, is to like continue this, you know, wonderful culture that exists around baseball. But if you want to be part of the future, you have to recognize and acknowledge and appreciate the past. And there's such amazing past in Oakland. And we've done a series of limited edition hats where we are kind of one by one acknowledging teams like the Oakland Oaks, the Oakland Larks, and recognizing, you know, them and honoring their colors. And, you know, we're going to do a lot more of that when it comes to game time, you know, programming. What the place that we end up playing, we're going to end up playing baseball, Raimondé Park, was Oakland Tribune once said more MLB players got their start from this municipal park than any other park in the country. And we wanted to play at Raimondé because of that history, because that's where Kurt Flood played. That's where Frank Robinson played. That's where, you know, it's like we are very much wanting to acknowledge, lift up, embrace the history of Oakland baseball. And we should have to do that if we want to be part of the future.
And so, Steve, I got to ask you, you grew up in the East Bay. Your parents have a business in West Oakland. You've been in West Oakland. You worked at West Oakland as a kid.
Yeah,
did you know all this incredible history about Raimondé Park?
I didn't at all, and I asked my dad about it. So the Atlas Heating and Air Conditioning Company on 32nd and Peralta, just, you know, handful of blocks north of Raimondé Field, was asking about that, and it turned out he actually had done some work with city organizers trying to get that field back to doing something. And this is obviously like, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But he had worked with Ellen Wyrick Parkinson, who was a longtime activist and had tried to make something of the field, and they just could never get anything off the ground. So I also was kind of miffed with him. I'm like,
why haven't I heard of this before?
Yeah, never heard of any of this. And then, of course, he was ecstatic to see Oakland ballers show up. And anytime you're getting new economic development investment in West Oakland, it's a pretty tight-knit community. And I was going to ask you guys just what that response and kind of has been from the broader community as you were thinking about sites and eventually choosing this site.
Yeah, I mean, the response from the community in Prescott, which is the neighborhood that Raimondé is in West Oakland, has been incredibly positive. And we've done a lot of work to engage the community. I literally went with the local council member door by door, like canvassing to see whether this was something that the neighborhood wanted. Right.
Wow. That's awesome.
We've had community meetings, you know, almost every 2 weeks, you know, since we announced our intention to play there, to listen to what the community was excited about, to address the concerns of the community. Like, it's very important to us that what we build in Raimondé is built with the community, not on the community. And too often, kind of development in general, totally. Specifically, stadiums are built on top of communities without sort of engaging the community stakeholders. And we actually want to build a stadium the way you build a startup, like from the ground up, piecemeal over time, you know, in partnership with your, you know, with your community. And so far, you know, the neighborhood has been tremendously excited about it.
And there also just feels like there's so much potential.
So much potential. Oh my God.
You've got, you know, multi-generational families that have been there. You've got just such amazing pockets in West Oakland that with the right kind of localized business are going to flourish. I mean, you can definitely look at it and see, you know, a couple years from now, this being just a key piece of that neighborhood and that kind of broader area coming back to life. And it's exciting.
It's really exciting. And for those folks who are outside of the Bay Area, you should know that Oxide is very, very close to Raimondé Park. We are, we're stoked to be within walking distance to Raimondé. And we are very close to where the Oaks used to play, though. That's now a Pixar campus. So we're just kind of across the street from Pixar here. But it was so great when you guys announced that location and explained the history of it, which I definitely didn't know. And it's like, wow, there's all this. I knew the history of the Oaks, but not of the Larks, for example. I thought that was great too. And so you kind of mentioned the merch in passing. I'd like the record to reflect that I am wearing.
You're wearing some good merch right now.
Well, what am I wearing right now, Steve?
You're wearing a Ballers hat, the green and white. I right now am on the merch site looking at the new black and gold.
Which is
you better go quickly because there's only 10.
I know. I'm trying to check out while we're on here.
So yeah. This hat, by the way, that and I was listening to a podcast with the Ballers GM explaining that, like, I got players whose families want a hat, and I'm like, yeah, I can't get it anything. Like, we are backlogged on all merch. We sold out. Apparently, how fast did this hat sell out? I mean, it sold out very quickly, right?
Yeah, I mean, all of the drops have sold out incredibly quickly and sort of exceeded our expectation. The first, we were told by our friends at Oaklandish, for those outside the Bay Area, is a you know, Oakland-based lifestyle brand, you know, very strong, very represents Oakland, works with all of the big, you know, brands. We were told that our first hat drop was the most successful hat drop they had had, with the exception of a limited edition Warriors drop, but it was the second in their entire history. And it far exceeded our expectations. Then we restocked that. This is just our forest and green, and ran out of the restock right before Christmas. And then, you know, we were doing these new era limited edition hats, and we had no idea what to expect. I mean, they're new era hats. Newer hats aren't cheap. We're doing them in colors that aren't our own colors. We're a brand new team. And, you know, so far, every drop that we've done has sold out within 5 days of and, you know, this one, the Oaks, the Larks one that we dropped last week will almost certainly, you know, sell out today, if not tomorrow. And, you know, the response has been incredibly overwhelming. It's also really, you know, one of the things that we intend to do around this is, like, normally you, as a new company, you would say, hey, just keep your brand consistent. Don't mess with new colors. But it's going to be so Oakland at our home games that everybody has the same hat, but everybody's going to be having the same hat in slightly different colors. But they're, you know, we're all there together. We're all repping the same team.
I love it. And I gotta say, I mean, they look great too, is the other thing. I mean, it's like, you know, my 16-year-old when he saw that, he's like, Dad, have you seen the new Ballers hat? I'm like, yeah, I've seen the Ballers hat. He's like, it is straight fire. And the 16-year-olds love it. And I think the 16-year-olds as a group, I think actually have pretty good taste in this kind of stuff. I wouldn't trust them for much, but I mean, are you partnering with Oaklandish to design the hats? I mean, who are you engaging with in terms of the actual, like, the creative side of that? Because they're good looking.
So our designer is Dustin Canelin. He is amazing. He designed the town, like the iconic Warriors town jersey.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
So a buddy of mine connected us to Dustin, like, early on in, I think, early July, well before we were established, when a lot of people were still kind of like, what are you guys doing? What? Really? That's like going to be your job now? And Dustin, you know, grew up in Alameda, lives in New York now, but, like, loves the Bay Area. He has his own line with Oaklandish and has been close with them for a long time. And we just think he hit the branding out of the park. So he did our entire visual identity and helped us helped us, further fortify our relationship with Oak Landish, who are now, you know, are essentially our apparel partners. So.
Yeah, I love it. And I love how, I mean, because it feels fresh, but also obviously reverential and referential. And it is really, really terrific. It's been, and also it must be exciting for you all to see that, just that quick uptake and to see how excited people are. I mean, I got to tell you, I gave my daughter a Ballers shirt for Christmas. And I mean, it was her favorite present. She was just delighted. Because I think she is so excited about it. And I just think it's like, man, it is so great. You know, I mean, to be able to deliver that kind of joy. I mean, this is the power that you've got, and to be able to do that with new company formation is just unbelievably terrific.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun when you see somebody rocking a Ballers hat on BART. That for me, that's like, that, it's like, cause I, you know, you see your friends wearing them and the people that have been bugging you to get hats for the last couple of months. And that's one thing, that's not that fun. But when you see like a stranger on BART wearing a hat for a team that we thought of 6 months ago, and we're like, is this going to work? And now people are wearing literally New Era fitted hats on BART. That's I do appreciate. That makes it kind
that
of
is awesome. All right, so you mentioned BART. You also have got BART as a sponsor, right? You got BART on the jersey, which I think is terrific.
BART. Which you know, both of those sponsors, BART and AAA, are, you know, marquee sponsors, not normally the sponsors that a Pioneer League team would get. And you know, when we did the sponsorship, we were invited to the number one morning show on the Bay Area to announce the sponsorship. And then, you know, that led our kind of, we ran through our stock of pre-drop jerseys. Well, you know, sort of immediately, like the initial returns on the initial evidence of excitement is really there. And it's humbling, and it's, you know, it's really great. I mean, as anybody who's built an organization knows, there's like a lot of tough days, right? Like, it is still a startup. It's actually two startups. And if you can imagine how much, like, you know, grind and complexity and talent is, that's all this that you're operating in. But it is nice to see the excitement. It's very different than any other startup I've done before. Like, multiple people have thanked me on the street for starting this team, like thanking me for, you know, telling me stories about how important baseball was to them, how devastated they were thinking about the A's, and how the one bright spot was, you know, the Oakland Ballers. And, you know, that makes it, makes the grind feel a lot better.
Well, I was just going to ask, because there have been so many days like that for us, Steve, and where it'd been really tough days, and where, you know, things are not going, and you're like, what are we doing? And it's the fact that we, you know, we have had so many out there cheering for us. And I mean, obviously a very different dynamic, but the, you know,
then you'll see the oxide shirt on the street.
Right. Yeah.
Metaphorically.
I've been stopped, you know, wearing oxide gear. I get stopped by people who talk about how it's like, oh, I'm never going to be a customer, but I love what you're doing. It's like, well, you say never going to be a customer. Like, hold on. This is the nice thing. You know, Paul and Brian, you could be like, hey, you know, our tickets start at like $25. Like, you can be everyone can be a customer. Whereas, like, you know, our machine started a little more than $21. But it's like, I just like know exactly what you mean, because those days feel like, oh man, this is meaningful, and it's important to me, and it's important to other people. And it's like, when you hit those headwinds, that must just, it's just easy to remind yourself about how important this is. And in your case, like, important at like such a deep resonance.
I mean, community level, a family level.
Totally. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was telling Brian before this, I was sending an email out to our OBA Pinto team families about
Orinda Baseball League.
Yeah. Sorry. Orinda Baseball. And these are, you know, 6-7-year-old kids. And it is in some ways kind of the best age. Because it is such a fun age to see kids starting to like fall in love with baseball and enjoy the game and starting to understand the rules and like the intricacies of baseball, and also like playing with dirt and throwing in each other's eyes. it's so great to have a good vector to try and get like this team out for kind of a postseason event. And the ballers are just such a good vector for that. And you could just see that kind of flourishing across all of Oakland. And it's going to be fun. What's the capacity?
5,000, right?
It's just around 4,000. Actually, we went through various ups and downs as we were laying out what the ballpark can hold. So the first year is going to be around 4,000 capacity, and we hope that there's a lot of games where that's full, because 4,000 passionate Oakland fans, rooting for a team that's winning.
It's going to be loud.
It's going to be deafening. It is going to be great. Well, and Steve, a coupling on that. So on that, you say the 7-8 year olds, and in this whole saga, there've been some journalists that have been covering it really closely. Brody Brazil, Casey Pratt, Paul and Brian, I'm sure you remember Brody Brazil broke down on air. And when he broke down, it was when, and it's, the tears come to my eyes just thinking about it. But when he described that 7 to 8 year old kid, in Danville or in East Bay and, not able to wear an Oakland A's hat, he just saw it. He's on Oakland A's hat on a 7-year-old and he just thought to himself, there's not gonna be anything that replaces that. And I think that to have something that replaces that for that kid, for those kids, it'll And even better, by the way, my hat got signed by all the players because they're all super stoked to have someone, which actually kind of leads to my next question. Paul and Brian, what do the players think? They must also be excited to be involved in this.
Yeah, they're really excited. And, we've started to get to know them a little bit. But I think that's really, spring training starts next month, and that's when we'll do. I've gotten to know about 3 or 4 players so far. Pretty well, but the rest not so much. Just a couple emails back and forth, but I think they're all, from what we've seen so far, incredibly humbled by. I think they feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves, and it's not just like your random, minor league baseball team that they're joining, but that there's something kind of historical happening that feels special. And so that's cool. Like we love that. Like people are excited to come and be a part of this thing. And that's the players. That's also just, it's across the board. Honestly, like it's elected officials in Oakland, it's community members in Prescott, like Paul was getting at. So we've never, we don't know what this is going to feel like once it starts, once the season starts, but so far it has been overwhelmingly positive. And I think there's just a lot of energy around, proving this narrative that Oakland can't come together and get something done, proving that wrong.
Totally. What I also loved that, we found the same thing at Oxide, you become this magnet for people that want to see that same difference in the world. And one of the folks that you attracted was JT Snow as a first base coach. Yeah. And I know, and Steve, I remember I told you about this. You're like, you're thinking of a different JT Snow. I'm like, no, 100%. No. I'm like, no, same JT Snow. It's like, I don't think that that's right. I'm like, all right. And you're like, oh my
God. Well, we got the email and we were like, who's pretending to be JT Snow and emailing us?
I would have the same reaction.
It was Christmas and we get an email to whatever, like info@oaklandballers.com. Hi, this is JT Snow. I used to play, for the Angels and
you may know me from
opportunities. And we were like, come on. And then, there's always these jump balls with who's going to call the person. And, Paul, I was like, I'll do this one, Paul. I got this one before Paul could even raise his hand FaceTime with JT Snow, who's like, I've been watching what you guys are doing. I've been seeing it on the news and I'm just really inspired by this thing that you're creating. And it was honestly, it was like the Twilight Zone. Cause it's like, but you're JT Snow. You saved Dusty Baker's kid.
Yeah. Right.
In the World
and
Series.
Also just one of the most humble baseball players, a terrific storyteller.
Incredibly humble guy. The only thing that's a little humble braggy about him is that he does have his 6 gold gloves in his background on his Zoom screen.
I noticed that too. I actually
would you
that.
Not?
No,
dude, wouldn't you? He has 6 straight gold gloves.
I'd carry would, them around with me on bar
ground like, of my Zoom screen. I would make it, you know, I would talk about it constantly. I'm just saying, like, that's how humble.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me move these gold gloves so I can make room for the. The gold gloves in your way. Let me just move that out of the way there.
Exactly.
I like it. It's a little intimidating. Don Wakamatsu, who runs baseball for us, he also, like, whenever Paul and I see him in person, he's rocking his World Series ring and he'll, like, twist it around. He'll twist it around his finger, which is a humble reminder to Paul and I that, like, we're not the people that actually know about the baseball things. That would be Don.
But that must be amazing to be able to attract these folks who are like, okay, these folks, like, you know, Don Wakamatsu and JT Snobbs, like, these are, you know, we're having to, like, move over World Series rings and golden gloves. Like, these are people who really know baseball well, and their enthusiasm must also be really infectious.
It makes it, yeah. It, early on, when Walk, 35-year, you know, career in baseball, 17 as a player, 18 as a coach, first Asian American manager in the history of MLB, like, two World Series rings in two different organizations, totally legit, respectable guy. When he agreed to work for us, it was one of those moments, and, you know, you have them in startups where you're like, oh, we've just hired somebody who's way better than us.
Yeah,
those moments are the best. Oh my God, those moments are so great.
They're the best. And then of course, what happens is that, you know, creates a flywheel. And then we get Micah Franklin, yeah, who's like the world's best hitting coach, and Aaron Miles and JT Snow, you know, calls us. And, like, now we have, you know, what some journalists have said is like a MLB quality coaching staff for a Pioneer League team. And that helps you get better players because these are development.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And because and you, they can yeah. choose.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can choose where they go. And so they're choosing to go to here because they know that they're going to get way better development than anywhere else. And then that allows us to put a better product on the field.
Well, and this flywheel effect is so important in a startup, especially because this is how you begin to gain momentum, is because you attract these extraordinary people, but then attract extraordinary people. And you just have to,
it's, do you remember when Adam joined?
I do remember. God, I remember when Adam joined. We actually got this guy.
Oh, like, who is this? God. Who is this impersonator? Who's claiming to be Adam Leventhal?
Who is this terrible man that wanted the Red Sox to break up Sean Manaea's no hitter?
Who should make the call?
But no, it is exhilarating. That's extraordinary. Again, for the players. Okay. So then the other thing I definitely want to ask you about, because I think I absolutely love you guys do so many things that are so clever and engaging and opening. I loved this open tryout that you did. Could you describe that a little bit? Cause I thought that was terrific.
Yeah. So we really wanted to get more, players from Oakland, wanted to get as many local players as possible. And so we have the idea that, you know, there's a lot of great talent out here. MLB has cut its draft significantly. There's a number of players who just haven't, you know, been on the radar, missed out on the opportunity. Let's invite them to come to a tryout and see if we can find, you know, anybody who can make the team. We had filled the majority of our roster, but we left a few slots for players to be able to make it. And so then we invited everybody to come out to Laney College about, you know, 10 days ago, and about 92 people came, and we, you know, we ended up making three offers.
Well, and I love the fact that you had, it was an open tryout. So you had, you know, people that, you know, you had Casey Pratt trying out, you know, you had, and the kind of back and forth online was very funny about that, but it was great that you, just to get people engaged. And then, of course, like, you got some really interesting folks out of that. Do you want to describe who you got out of that? Because we're going to be, there's some terrific folks.
Sure. I mean, well, you know, the one that's kind of been making waves is Kelsey Whitmore, who we brought in to pitch for us. Kelsey is a woman, and she is going to be on the Oakland Ballers this year. She played pro ball for the Staten Island Fairy Hawks in last year in the Atlantic League, and she's a middle reliever. Actually, I think for the last 2 years, and, you know, we had met with her. We were kind of interested in her. Walk was looking at her, but we decided we weren't ready to make an offer for her. But we did invite her to come to our open tryout, you know, where our coaching staff will be, and let's see what she's got. And she just, like, brought it. It was incredible. I mean, she doesn't overpower hitters, but her command of the strike zone, she can just sort of place it wherever she wants. And the coaching staff just all looked at each other. And by the way, Paul and I don't make baseball decisions. We leave that to the people that know how to make baseball decisions, but they all, you know, they just said, yes, let's do this. And so really excited to have her on the team. Also, like my 10-year-old daughter and her 10-year-old friend were at the tryout, and they were like, they couldn't believe it. They were so excited to watch Kelsey. So I do think that, like, while we weren't going to sign her because she is a woman, the fact that we signed her based on her ability, I think that there is an opportunity to bring in other people, my daughter notwithstanding, who otherwise might be like, this game, whatever. But, you know, they were literally like, you could see this light and glow in my daughter's eyes because she was so excited that to watch this woman pitch. So really excited about her, Paul. And then signed two other players that I'm less familiar with, to be honest.
One of them throws 95, so you've got some folks that throw gas. They got picked up another pitcher, and then I think a shortstop as well, right? I mean, they've got maybe
from San Francisco, who is one of the best little leaguers, a little league all-star in San Francisco, and was high was very highly regarded initially in the draft, and think that still has a great career in front of him.
That is awesome. I personally love just like experiment. I mean, I'm really excited to see Kelsey Whitmore pitch because I love it. Just looking at the footage and, you know, hearing about what the coaches were saying about command and placement I personally think that we have over enshrined velocity, just not to go too much down the baseball rat hole, but velocity is important. It also injures a lot of pitchers. And I personally think a Greg Maddux would do pretty well in the MLB today, and a real craftsperson who knows pitch location and everything else. So I'm excited for this.
I couldn't agree more on that front, and not to get nerded out on baseball specifically, but I think that's right. And then in an era where everybody's, you know, what is translatable from baseball to other fields is when everybody's going in one direction, there's sometimes a really strong opportunity to go in the exact opposite direction. And everybody's going for just power. And so it's a very different look now for somebody who's not powerful, but is just hitting every single corner with every single pitch. It's a big change in look. And so, that's part of the logic, for Kelsey and I. And I think actually part of the logic for a whole bunch of opportunities for different styles of pitchers. Like, everybody's been in baseball sort of chasing the same thing, which is, let's just try to throw 100. And then when everybody tries to chase the same thing, if you do it differently, you really have a differentiation. You have an opportunity.
That sounds like Oakland baseball.
At the same time, all the other teams in the Pioneer League, they all play at altitude, right? Because they're all, Idaho, Colorado, Utah, Montana. So I think the fact that we're going to be the only teams that play at sea level is good. It's just a different thing. And, you know, these games in the Pioneer League, because the ball travels, it's like the Rockies, right? They're often like 14 to 18, but it's going to be different when they come to the Bay. And so I think that could potentially benefit somebody with precision pitching around the strike zone like Kelsey tremendously.
Well, yeah. And so in particular, just so to give people a little bit of color on this. So in baseball, the altitude really makes a difference, and the ball will go a lot further at altitude. As a result, part of the reason that the Rockies have never really broken out, pitchers do not want to go pitch at altitude. And so I think that you've got a real differentiator in terms of being able to get pitchers that are like, thank you. No, I don't feel I need to get lit up at Utah or whatever. So that's going to be a really interesting dynamic. And Adam, I love what you said about, in terms of like, it sounds like Oakland baseball. I mean, this is what Oakland has done. And I think that this is the terrific tradition that you are carrying on of like being creative. And I got to say, this is where you get like, this is so Bay Area to me. And one of the things I loved about going to A's games is this is, to me, such a true Bay Area experience where people are so creative and brainy and energetic. And to me, what you all have done, this is a Bay Area solution to this problem of just being innovative and being bold and willing to do something that other people just thought was impossible. But to do it with the community at your back. And I'm excited. I got to tell you, I am super excited. I know that I'm sure, like, so, and just to be clear, so folks understand, like, Raimondi Park is being built basically right now. I mean, the park exists, obviously, historic park, but you all are doing a lot of improvements, like, say, building seats right now, right?
We are, yeah, yeah. So it's a park. It's been around for, you know, for decades. We talked about its history, but we had to do a lot of work just to get the baseball field up to pro standards because it hadn't been used for 5 years and the irrigation system wasn't working and the grass was overgrown. And then we are building, it's temporary, it's not, you know, but we are building, you know, 4,000 plus, you know, temporary grandstands. So the vibe is going to be like 48 block parties around a baseball field. A lot of work is being done. You know, right now, most of that work is in the ground. You know, I think sod is coming next week. But it's been really great. And we haven't even done this, but the neighbors have been like, you know, taking videos and putting on Instagram and putting it on, you know, other places and just excited reporting the progress. You know, just wait until May when the structures start coming up. Like, it's going to be, we're going to see a ballpark being built in Oakland, you know, in a month, really.
And, you kind of made references earlier, but I just, because there is this narrative out there, it's like, oh, the city doesn't want you to build everything. It seems like the city has been really excited to help you get this thing built.
Beyond. Yeah, they've been our partners. They're literally clearing the way for us. So it's the opposite of what, you know, what has been said about this. Our experience has been the opposite of what was said about working with the city of Oakland by the team that's leaving. I'll just leave it at that.
That is awesome. And I think that the team that's leaving, the team that shall remain unmentioned.
Voldemort.
Yeah. Exactly. That it would, and just, I think it, everybody wants to prove the world wrong, the city included, right? I think the city is like, no, we want to show that you can build here. We want to show that fans want to show, like, we can support this. West Oakland and Prescott wants to show that, like, no, you can build stuff here and we're excited for it. That is so, all right. So you describe your schedule. When does that kind of kick off here? Because that's the other thing, you know, in a startup, you often are trying to do things as quickly as possible, but your schedule is rarely dictated externally the way yours has been. Like, you have a very fixed schedule that you're up against.
Yeah. Yeah. So our first home game, you know, game start in May, you know, in May, but we start on the road for the first couple of weeks. The big date, the one that's like, you know, on our, that will live in infamy on our calendar, because it is unmovable in ways that product releases and other things, you know, tend not to be, is June 4th. And so it is a, you know, all hands on deck, you know, constant daily effort to make sure that all of things that need to happen in order to, you know, build a ballpark, you know, by June 4th is done. And that's the first home game. You know, we're hoping and expecting that it's going to be, you know, a tremendous event and a tremendous, like, a celebratory event for the city of Oakland, proving what Oakland had accomplished in that period of time, and then proving what we've been saying from the beginning, that baseball is not going anywhere, no matter what the other team, as Brian describes it, might want to do.
That is awesome. So,
yeah. And what follows is essentially 48 home games in June, July, and August. And, you know, and it's six games a week. We play every day but Monday. We're on the road half the time. And our, you know, when we're at home, like Paul said, it's going to be like 48, you know, block parties around a baseball game. And kind of thematically or programmatically, the way we're looking at it is like the first season is kind of a love letter to Oakland. So we will be releasing a programming calendar shortly, so you can get a taste of what some of the theme nights are. But it really indexes heavily on community engagement and partnerships with various community groups, showcasing what Oakland's all about.
God, that is awesome. So, I mean, I would say to those of you who are in the Bay Area, or if you've got travel that's going to bring you through the Bay Area this summer, this is something to go check out. This is something to just, I think, see. And I mean, if you've never, I think there's something glorious with just watching baseball at this level. It's exciting. You're going to have people who are really pouring their hearts out on the field. I think I'm looking forward to a fan environment that I think is going to be extraordinary. I think it's actually, I love the fact that it's unaffiliated, because I think that you don't have to worry about a player like really popping off and then getting called up to the although actually the Oakland A's send people down when they pop off, so you know I gotta stop mentioning the other team, but the the fact that we're going to be able to follow these players all the way through the season, and that the kids are going to be able to learn their stories and what their journey was, and I just think it's going to be so energizing. And I gotta tell you, I got my opening night tickets. Very stoked.
I did the same a couple hours ago. Actually, are there still tickets left? Because I bet those are just about full.
There are still tickets left. So if folks want to go get tickets for opening day, you can through our website at oaklandballers.com. We do expect that opening day will be a sellout, but it's not yet. So there's time for
don't
people
delay.
To go.
Don't delay. Yeah, because they really just went on sale very recently, and they almost certainly will sell out. And Adam, I'm really looking forward to taking in a ball game there with you this summer.
It's gonna be great.
It's gonna be great. And Paul and Brian, I cannot thank you enough. I mean, I think that, I can't thank you enough for what you're doing for the community, for baseball. I think you're giving everyone something to be excited about and look forward to. And then the fact that you're doing it in this just absolutely impossible situation of having to start not just one team, but two. And I mean, having to do it with, again, such incredible time bounds. I mean, this is as your fellow entrepreneurs, like it's an incredibly inspiring story. And
so YOLO.
It is. It really is. And then thank you also for agreeing to be on our crazy podcast. If you start a Bowers podcast, I'm going to be an avid listener to that thing, man. You got to get like an inside Bowers podcast.
I think you got to start a Bowers podcast.
Oh God. Yeah. You definitely should. I think that, so here's okay. As long as we're offering free advice, I think a Bowers podcast is, in particular, there's so much that happens inside of baseball that people don't see and appreciate, that the players and the manager staff and so on know. And I think that there are so many that in the MLB system, I think that players are so discouraged from saying anything. Everyone lives in fear. They live in fear of being sent down. They live in fear of pissing people off. And you've got a culture that is really uplifting, and I would love to have you capture some of that. I would love to get these stories of some of these players. And I'm going to be if and when you start a podcast. I'm going to be an avid.
Or in the meantime, let's get to How I Built This.
Oh, How I Built This with the Oakland Ballers would be great.
Huge. All right, Guy Raz, if you're listening.
Guy Raz, yeah, we're not you, Kevin Roos. Keep walking. Nope. Well, Paul and Brian, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You're going to have, when Steve and I started Oxide, I had this kind of crazy idea that we would have like an Oxide box at the Coliseum, and I was surprised at how much the loss of that future that doesn't exist yet. So we're not there yet as a company by a long shot, but when they announced they were leaving, I realized that I was like mourning for this future that I wasn't going to have. And it was really, upsetting. And it was just in so many different dimensions. Right. And now I'm like, no, we are going to have, it's going to be, we're going to have
the Ballers box.
We're going to take, if you buy an Oxide rack, we're going to take you to a Ballers game. You're coming to a Ballers game on the house. We're going to have we're excited to head over there to Irmonday Historic Irmonday Park and take in the block party and watch some great baseball with what's going to be incredible energy.
We don't have boxes. We're not that kind of team, but we can do experiential things for groups. So if you want to bring
don't
your
worry.
Team out,
we're not. When we said boxes,
we're not fancy like that, but we love to have you at games, and we trade in fanciness. We can exchange for accessibility and being able to touch and feel the product. And we're excited to have you. And thank you for having us on the podcast. This has been fantastic.
You bet. All right.
Awesome.
All right. Let's go Ballers. Can't wait.
Thanks so much, guys. See you at the park.